What we're going to do now is we're going to talk about something called diffraction. Diffraction is basically sort of like this drawing, except in this you're going to have, we can compare it in the following way. Here we have one slit with width A, and we have a screen. Okay? Now before we've considered that these slits are so small that basically they, according to Huygens' principle, they transmit waves as if they're just a point source of waves, right? Every point on a wave is a source of new waves, and so each of these slits becomes that. But you can see even from the way I've drawn it that, okay, in the middle of this slit, yeah, that's a source of waves, but then this point on the edge of it would have waves that would look like this, and they would be a little bit offset, okay? And that's exactly what's happening with diffraction. It's an idealization to say that the slit width doesn't matter. In diffraction, what actually is happening is waves from, say, this region of the slit can interfere with waves from this region of the slit. The fact that there's no opaque material between those two regions is irrelevant. What matters is that I have sources of waves here and sources of waves here, and the path differences at some point P on the screen are different. And so exactly the same process that gave us our interference pattern happens here. It's just that the geometry is slightly different and we use a little different thing. Before, we cared about the inner slit spacing. Here, we care about the slit width. Okay? The expressions that we get are going to look similar. You have to be very careful because the expression that gives minima here, dark regions, looks exactly like the expression here that gives maxima or bright regions. So you don't want to confuse those. And you want to keep D and A separate. Okay? All right. So let's do basically something like what we did with interference. Let's do that with a single slit of width A. Okay, that's probably too wide, but all right. And what you want to consider is that, okay, let's divide this slit into two pieces. Okay? And in each of these pieces, every point at the bottom of this slit will interfere with every point at the bottom of this slit. Okay? So again, it's like a double slit with no space in between them. Okay? Now, at this screen, so let's say that we have some point here. All right? And we're going to do the same sort of approximation. We have some point P here. And so there's going to be, now, these obviously are not parallel rays. That's because I've made this slit huge compared to how it actually would be, so you could see it. But usually, if this slit was really small, imagine you had a slit like this, and then a point P here. This angle, and these rays are very, very close to parallel. As A gets smaller and smaller, and this distance gets large, then these two rays are pretty much parallel to each other. Okay? Now, the angle theta is the angle, if you have a line that runs from this slit, from this material here over to the screen, then there's an angle between that line and the ray that goes from the point where the light is coming from and point P. Okay? And again, if these two are parallel, then that angle is also this angle theta. And obviously it doesn't look that way the way I've drawn it, because I've inflated A to some huge amount. But if we call this theta prime, if A is small, theta prime and theta are basically the same. Okay? Now, the book doesn't mention this at all. I just want you to, you know, I don't want you to get confused by the way that this looks. Now, in the same way that we had before, there is a distance here. We could call it delta, just like we called it before, which is, if these two rays are parallel, then this distance from here to here is the same as this distance from here to here. Okay? There's one small little piece that this bottom point, light coming from here, has to go a little further than the top ray. Okay? Again, this is exactly the same scenario as we had with the double slit case. Okay? Now, this distance, okay, so if this is A, then what is this distance here? I've split the thing in half. A over 2. Okay? And basically, this triangle here is going to be the same as this triangle here. So that means this angle is theta. Okay? So, and this is a right angle here. So I can calculate this length delta from the trigonometry of that little triangle. And so that's going to be A over 2 times sine theta. Okay? Okay? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, good. So, now, all right, again, we're going to do just what we did before. This is the piece that marks how much distance this ray has to go more than this ray. So if this distance, delta, is one wavelength, then they get to P at the same phase as they had here, and they will constructively interfere. If delta is a half a wavelength, or 1 plus a half wavelength, or 2 plus a half wavelength, then I'm going to get a situation where this has to travel an extra half wave. And so it will be negative when this one is positive, and they will destructively interfere. So we can write a condition down, which is that A over 2 sine theta equals lambda over 2. This is the condition for minima, or dark regions. Okay. Okay. So what this is, and I can rewrite this as now, so what this is telling us is at point P, all right, now, okay, let me step back for a second. What have I done here? I divided the slit into halves. This is the smallest integer I can divide this thing into. I could have divided the slits into hundredths, thousandths, millionths. The smallest thing I can divide it into is halves, okay? And that's implicit here, okay? If I want to divide it into a higher number, I will have to do this a little differently. We'll get to that in a second. But when this is halves, this is like the double slit case. This wave here is interfering with this wave here. And implicit in the way that I did this, they get halfway out of phase. And so this is basically the destructive interference case. And it's also the first minimum, okay? Because it's the smallest I've divided that wave into. Now, And I'll point something else out, which is that we're talking about diffraction here, but we're using the word interference to refer to this. So diffraction and interference don't, even though they're separate chapters in the book and the geometry slightly different, they're the same fundamental phenomenon. Okay? Now, if I wanted to divide this instead of into halves, I would divide it into fourths, then I would get a little bit different expression. But basically, what I would end up with, let's see if I can do it easily for you. So let's say I want to divide that up into fourths. Then what I would end up with here is A is 2m sine theta. Make sure I don't confuse the issue. So this is now this was explicitly two halves. This is now the general case where I could divide my slit into 2m pieces. So I could divide it into halves, fourths, sixths, eighths, thousandths, whatever. Okay? So that means that if I just move things around, okay? So what I get is, for some, in general, when I'm talking about minima in general, I have sine theta equals m lambda over a, where m is plus or minus 1, 2, 3, etc. So that's the order. Kind of like the m that we had in the double slit case. Okay. One thing you'll notice, though, is that it doesn't start with 0, it starts with 1. So there's no minimum at 0. Okay. And, so there's no minimum at zero. And the other thing to remember, this equation, this is for minima. This is for destructive interference. This is the same equation as for maxima or constructive interference that we had for the double slit case. So be careful. Don't confuse these two. And, you know, remember, this is A, this is the slit width. Whereas before, there was a D, that's the slit spacing. Okay? All right. So what this is telling me is that if I were to look here, I'm going to get a very wide maximum. This would be theta, this would correspond to m equals 0, but I don't get a minimum here. And then I'm going to get, and I don't know how big these should be, I'm going to get things that are spaced a little more closely after that. So this is the first minimum, second, third, fourth. But since I don't have a zero here, it doesn't end up looking like this. Okay? So I already can tell from this expression that I'm going to get a broad, bright region. And then I'm going to get evenly spaced satellites that go out and out. I don't know how bright they'll be, but that's the structure that I'll see. Okay? Okay, so let me try to show that to you. Let's now try to go through this and think about it from the point of view of intensity. Okay? So we're going to do the same thing that we did before. Where we have this geometry here, okay, and what we can think about is that this drawing's getting too complicated. Let's now consider that in this gap we have some region delta y, Okay, so it has some width delta y. Okay? And of course, and there's some thing here, and there's an angle theta here. So there's, we want to look at the pattern at point P, and we have some angle of theta with respect to P. And remember, I've blown this A up. So basically, all of the points here have correspond to an angle to point P that's the same. Even though, you know, by I, if I had my delta Y here, it would look like this angle was much bigger. But that's not, remember that this is really, the slit width is very small. Now, what we can do is we could think, all right, in this region here, we're going to have this same little triangle, which would be very hard for you to see, but there's something delta y over 2 sine theta. This is the difference in number of wavelengths, or distance, I should say, going from the top of this slit to the bottom of this slit. Okay? So that's the scale of the interference across our little element delta y. And the phase difference, okay, if I want to figure out what is the phase difference, I could consider something, I'll call it beta. I'm calling this beta because it's different, it's analogous to phi that we were doing before, but I want to keep the symbol separate. So this is the phase difference for adjacent delta y's. And so this is basically just normalizing it to radians. So it's 2 pi over lambda times delta y over 2 sine theta. And I'm sorry it's hard to write the notes, but I will post these, of course. Okay? Now, so that's the phase difference in radians. And if I wanted to know what the total phase difference across this whole slit would be, then what I would have is beta equals the number of dy's in the slit times delta beta, which equals n times 2 pi lambda delta y over 2 sine theta. Okay? And oh, wait, I'm sorry. I made one mistake. There's no 2 here. This is just delta y over sine theta. Yeah, sorry about that. Okay? Okay? So this is now the total phase difference. Across the slit. Okay. Now, we know something else, which is that n, what is n times delta y? What does this equal? So if I have some width delta y, and the number of those that fit in A is n, what is n times delta y? A. Okay? So I can write this slightly differently as 2 pi A over lambda sine theta. Okay? So that's the total phase difference. And this is now just in terms of the typical size of the slit, wavelength, and the angle that I'm looking at. Now, what we can do is we can actually think of this in terms of phasor diagrams. So if I only have 2 slits, then what I have is 2 phasors, okay, where the phase between the two of these is beta, okay? And what I would do is I would do exactly what I did before for the double slit case, and I would calculate a resultant, so this is, say, E1 and E2, and I would calculate from this triangle E2. of E sub r, which is the resultant. Okay? And so, for instance, let's do a couple cases. If beta is 0, okay, then what I'm going to get is basically, depending on whatever n is the number of these. Now, here I've picked 2, but it could be any number. They're just going to line up. So what's going to happen is ER is going to equal n times E0. Okay, remember, the magnitude of each of these is E0. Okay? So if my angle between these is 0, then I don't have an angle between this and this. They're basically all in line. And so it's just 3 times the length of one of them, or 2 times, or whatever the number of little pieces is. And again, this is analogous to the multi-slit case that we were doing last week. Okay? Now, if beta is 2 pi, okay, now what's going to happen is I'm going to get, and I'm going to exaggerate it here, let's say I don't divide this into just 2 pieces, I'm going to divide it into, 10 pieces. Well, now what I'm going to have is something that looks sort of like this. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. No, there should have been 10. Okay, so n is 9. I didn't fit 10 in there. Okay, but if it's 2 pi, that means the angle that I started out with goes all the way back here. All right. Well, what is ER in this case? How much distance is there from where I started out to where I ended up?
None.
0. Okay? So when beta is 2 pi, then I have no, I have a minimum. I have no magnitude to the E field. Okay? Which again, that's going to tell me what the intensity is. I could do beta equals 3 pi, and there I'll just write it. It's going to actually wrap around 1.5 times, okay? And here, it actually turns out it's not so easy to calculate because the size of this corkscrew changes. But it's certainly greater than 0, okay? And it would be where there's a maximum, because this would be the largest, on this loop, would be the largest distance from where I started out, okay? So I would get a maximum of 3 pi. Calculating its magnitude's a little tricky, but, you know, so this is what I get. Now, okay. So let me just mention one other thing. If let's just take this one here, the 2 pi case. In this case, I can use my phasor diagram to write down the expression that I derived a little bit earlier. So basically, I could say, okay, fine. Beta is 2 pi. And I can equate that with this expression to get the condition that I need for minima. So I could say 2 pi equals 2 pi over lambda times a sine theta. And then basically what I'll get is for minimum is sine theta is going to equal lambda over a. So that's the first minimum. All right? So there, I haven't done really much with the geometry of the double slits and anything. What I've done here is I've just considered phasor diagrams that said first minimum is the first time that I can draw a full circuit, bring the head of the last arrow back to the tail of the first, and that minimum corresponds to 2 pi. That's the first time that I get this condition, a minimum. And so I can use my phasor diagram to figure out what the condition is for the first minimum. Okay? And I can do this, you know, I'm going to get the same thing when I go to 4 pi, 6 pi, 8 pi. And so then that's where I'm going to realize, oh, there actually should be an m in front of here for the order. Okay? So I'm trying to show you by talking about it this way that phasors really can be possibly an easier, it depends on how you learn, people learn differently, but they can be possibly an easier way to think about where some of these come from. And in particular, if you're trying to remember, wait a minute, is this for minima or maxima or whatever, maybe thinking of the phasor diagram will help you go, no, no, because if it's a single slit, then the phasor diagram would look like this. I mean, this, when you're trying to work out these problems, there are sometimes different ways to get at the same information. There's not one unique way. There is one answer, but okay. So let's take this to sort of its extreme. All right. Let's consider the case where N, capital N, goes to infinity, or delta Y goes to zero. So now we've got some little tiny infinitesimal region that light's coming from, and each of these are going to be interfering with each other. Okay? This is the extreme case. Now, if I take that situation, now what I'm going to have is I'm still going to have a total phase difference from one side of the slit to the other, beta. Okay? So what's going to happen is I'm going to have all these little, you know, little segments, dy's, okay, and they're each going to have some shift in phase with respect to each other, and the final phase is beta with respect to the initial phase, okay? So in the limit that this dy, delta y goes to zero, this becomes a curve. What it is it's an arc length of a circle. Okay? Okay? This is the phasor diagram where n goes to infinity or delta y goes to zero. Yes? Well, you have to remember, so this sine theta, okay, how can we say it? We could say it, if you take this equation, all right, let me try it this way. What you're thinking is that beta equals n times 2 pi over lambda times delta y over 2, oh, well, delta y. Yeah, I still have that there. Shouldn't have that. Times sine theta. Okay? So what you're saying is that if delta y goes down to zero, okay, then beta goes to zero. However, n is going up by the same amount that delta y is going down. If delta y goes down by a factor of 2, n has to go up by a factor of 2 because the side of the slit hasn't changed. Okay? Right? So you still get a net beta, non-zero beta. Okay? Okay? But the total beta, so the total beta would be shown here, and it's the arc length of a segment along a circle. Okay? That's in the limit where delta y goes to zero. Now, if, and I'm too stubby to do this, crap. That's all. Okay, obviously the center of that circle would be somewhere about 3 inches higher, but I can't reach it, so you'll have to forgive me. This angle is beta. Okay? It's just the length of that arc. Okay? I can bisect this thing so that this angle is beta over 2. Okay? Now, this is my length of all the little phasors, but of course my final E field is the line from the beginning to the end. Okay? So this is E sub r here. Okay? If this arc is part of a circle, then E sub r is a chord across cutting through that circle from one point on the end of the arc to the other end of the arc. Okay? And it has a length of ER. Now, if ER is the total length, that means that the bisected length, this is a right angle, this piece is ER over 2. Okay? And this distance, by the way, the radius of the circle, we call capital R. Okay? Now, there's something else that we want to know. The length of this, we can only really do this with phasors. What we're going to try to do is talk about intensity. But this length, this arc length, we also can calculate. So that's going to be R times beta. Okay? So it's R times the angle in radians. All right? Okay. All right, given this geometry, let's consider this triangle right here. All right? If this angle is beta over 2, does somebody want to hazard a statement on what would sine beta over 2 be equal to in terms of r, e sub r, those sorts of things? What would sine of beta over 2 equal? So we have this right triangle here, okay? In general, what is sine? Is it x over y, y over r? Y over r, right? Opposite over the hypotenuse, okay? So in general, this is y over r. We know r is this r. This is the hypotenuse. What's y? E sub r over 2. So, okay? So now we're able to calculate sine beta over 2, okay? And now we're actually going to be in fairly good shape. Because what we want to do is we want to figure out what E sub r is. So if I move stuff around, E sub r is going to equal 2 times r sine beta over 2. But r, okay, this is E0. This is the length of this arc. But this R, okay, see if I get this right, is going to equal E0 over beta. So I can substitute this in, okay, I shouldn't erase, that'll confuse. So this is 2 times E0 over beta times sine beta over 2, okay, and which equals E0 times the quantity sine beta over 2 over beta over 2, okay? So this is the E field at point P, okay, from the single slit, incorporating our knowledge of the interference of the light from all points along that slit. Okay? All right? Now, we can do just what we did before with, okay, I'm going to have to get rid of this. What we did before with the double slit was that we knew that I is proportional to e sub r squared. Okay? So what this means is that I is going to equal I max, which is some number that includes E0 in it. And then that's going to be times sine beta over 2 over beta over 2 quantity squared. Okay, and this is times. It's I max times that contribution. Okay, where beta over 2 equals pi a sine theta over lambda. Okay? And then here, so that's fine. Now, when beta equals m times pi, where m is plus or minus 1, 2, 3, dot, 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 we get minima, right? And you could plug that in to demonstrate that. But it's like the phasor diagram that I showed you earlier where we did pi 0, 2 pi, 3 pi, that sort of thing. Okay? So this is minima. Okay? So this expression is an important expression that talks about what the interference pattern, sorry, the diffraction pattern would be from a single slit. And what it ends up looking like is sort of what I had drawn here. You get a very wide central maximum and then more closely spaced minima that are much dimmer as you go out. Okay, so that's how you would use phasor diagrams to try to understand diffraction, and it's not fundamentally different from how we used phasors to understand multiple slit interference because they're inherently the same process. This has implications for technology, for instance. How well you can build optics, right? So let's get rid of some of this, okay? Let's get rid of all of it, actually. Let's consider that I have a telescope. This could be not just a telescope. This could be telephoto lens. This could be I don't know, some other optics, but let's say that I have a telescope, okay? Okay? And I've got two stars. Now, this is, okay, it could be anything. It could be there's a car really far away down the road, and there's two headlights, and I want to know, is it a motorcycle or is it a car? Okay, and ignoring air disturbances and stuff, can I resolve those two headlights? Okay, well, there's a fundamental limitation that comes into play because the light from these two has to pass through some aperture. Okay, so there's an aperture. The important aperture is going to be, well, it's going to be the eyepiece here. Okay. The important aperture in the telescope case is going to be the size of the aperture. That's what we call it, right? And this aperture can cause diffraction of the two nearby amounts of light. Now, we're talking about very tiny angles that these two objects can be separated by, but at some point, what happens is that if we take the diffraction drawing that I showed before, let's imagine that I have a star here and I have a star here. Well, what they're going to do is they're not going to produce points on a screen or a CCD camera or my eye. They're going to produce diffraction patterns. So I'm going to have something that looks like this. And the other one, this is not going to be good. Okay, I'll do it. This is trying to be dotted. I hope you can see that. Okay, so here's number, if this is 1, and this is 2, then this is 2, and this is 1. But what I end up with is I end up with a maximum and a maximum for the two objects. But of course, they extend out. The diffraction has spread the images of these two objects out. Okay? And you've actually seen this sometimes if you've seen images, really nice photographic images will sometimes have rings around stars and things, and that's coming from this. But basically, what happens is that, let's imagine that, so here, I can clearly see that I've got a maximum here and a maximum here. So I have two objects. But some of the light from this is underneath in the same location as the light from this one, and vice versa. So they're actually getting too close together for me to identify exactly this light is from this object and this light is from this object. But if these things were closer together, I can end up, let's just take the maxima, all right? Then I can end up with something that looks sort of like this. Now, okay, one of them is here and one of them is here, but what I'm going to see with my eye is I'm going to see this. I'm not going to be able to tell that that's two objects. For me to be able to tell that it's two objects means I've got to see a dim region in between them. Okay? And I don't. They're too close together. And so what has happened is that this distance at which I stop being able to resolve, this corresponds to an angle, theta. Okay? There is some, given the aperture of my telescope, which is the width of this slit, this is D, okay? But given the size of that aperture, there is some diffraction limit to that optical device, which means that some angular distance between objects cannot be resolved, because angles smaller than that are now corresponding to the distances between maximum and minimum in the diffraction pattern for that object. Okay? So if I can't, if the distance between this thing and this thing is smaller, is less than the distance, let's say if this distance here, theta, is smaller than the distance between this peak and its minimum here, let's call that theta prime. If theta prime is larger than theta, then I can't tell them apart. I don't have any dark area between the two objects. The first time I can identify them is if this maximum corresponds to the second maximum of the other diffraction. Then I get a dim region between the two peaks. You can say, aha, there are two objects there. Okay? So the criteria here is that the angular separation between them has to be at least lambda over a. If the angular separation is less than lambda over a, I can't get them. Now, lambda is a really tiny number. This is in hundreds of nanometers. And a is a huge number. This is in centimeters or even meters. These huge telescopes that we have now. So this ratio is tiny, but it's not zero. And so there is some small angle that I can't resolve anymore. Okay? There is a criterion, there's a version of this called Rayleigh's criterion. And it's basically, you could take the small angle approximation, means that theta has to be greater than lambda over a. But if you do it in two dimensions with a realistic case, what you end up with is that theta has to be greater than 1.22 lambda over a. Okay? So this is a useful thing, and this gives you, that is the, is related to the resolution of the optics. Okay? If the optics has a given aperture A, corresponds to D in this drawing, then it will have some theta, some diffraction-limited resolution given by Rayleigh's criterion. And you can't resolve things that are closer together than that angle. Okay?